Comic Book Club News gives you the comic book news you need to know first thing in the morning every weekday in the form of digestible 3 to 5 minute long podcasts. Comic Book Club News recaps breaking news stories from Marvel, DC Comics, and beyond, Monday through Friday. New episodes drop 6 a.m. ET in the Comic Book Club News feed, so they're ready for you when you're ready for the day. Comic Book Club News. You hear it second or third, possibly fourth.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
What is up? I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a ton of books that have come out this week. Let's kick it off talking about a big one, finishing up its run, killing it, if you will. The Punisher, number 12 from Marvel, written by Jason Aaron.
We're starting here, man.
Gotta get it out of the way.
This is for you, Pete.
Punisher number 12 from Marvel, written by Jason Aaron, art by Jesus Saiz and Paul Azaceta. This is finishing up Jason Aaron's run on The Punisher. And in case you haven't been reading it, Maria, his wife, is back to life. She wants a divorce from Frank Castle. He has become the Hand of the Beast. I don't know. There's a bunch of hands and fists. Fist of the Beast. There you go. Daredevil's the Hand of the Hand, and Punisher is the Fist of the Beast. Is that what's happening?
And yeah, and Moon Knight's the Beast of the East.
and Wolverine's the Finger of the Foot. There's a lot of stuff going on here. But this is wrapping up the run. He has seemingly turned evil, or at least has gone potentially too far on his war on crime at the behest of the Hand.
I'm curious to hear Pete's perspective.
I know there's going to be a debate going on here.
Headline from Zalbin Daily: has the Punisher gone too far?
Too far?
I do love that at one point in this book, one of the characters, I think it's Moon Knight, is like, hey, you're the biggest mass murderer in history, right? And Punisher's like, sure am. Anyway, the Marvel heroes are coming for him. It all comes down to this, and we get Jason Aaron leaving it in a place like, I would say, in a classic Daredevil end of run place, where he's like, well, I'm finishing up what I have to say and leaving it in a crazy place for the next person. Goodbye.
Oh, mic drop. Yeah.
But if there's one person you want to hear from about this book, I think it's me. And I gotta say, I thought this is, I don't want to eat Pete's lunch ahead of him eating it, but this run is just, it's epic.
Before you step on all my shit, I just want to say, like, I was really impressed with this. Jason Aaron gives you a kind of like little letter at the end there, kind of giving you his kind of thoughts about the character and summing things up. I was very touched by his letter. I thought it was very cool that he kind of included that in the last issue. And Justin, if you want to kind of take it back over, but I was super impressed by what we got in this comic. We got Jason Aaron being like, what if Punisher kind of and his wife kind of had a moment, or one last kind of moment. So I think that this played out very realistic. You know, if you have somebody who's dealing with PTSD and is kind of gone off the deep end, I think that you would want to get a divorce from them and, you know, take the money and run. So, I was a little...
It's always interesting what you focus on, Pete.
Definitely. Because I got to say that the realism of this book is where it's at is a shocking idea. To be like, this, that's real. Yeah, that's very real fun.
But I think what Pete is actually trying to say, to translate for you, Pete, for a second, is this book is actually dealing with some very grounded emotions and some very realistic, palpable emotions between the characters of Maria and Frank in particular, in the middle of all this insanity and magic bullets that send you to weird world and all of these other things going on, where it does come down to the idea of, like, everything we've always talked about with the Punisher on the show is what Jason Aaron is dealing with here. That, yes, he's gone too far. Why has he gone too far? Let's go into it. Is it actually, how can you justify murdering thousands of people at this point because your family was killed in a park one time? And what does that mean? And what does that mean for him? But also, what does that mean for her? It takes it to these really fascinating places. And I appreciated how relatively small this last issue was. We've already gotten insanely over-the-top battles throughout this entire run. Yeah. Here, it ended in almost a more quiet way, even though there was some wild stuff that happened at the same time. So, phenomenal, banner run on Punisher. Good enough that it makes me forgive the fact that Jason Aaron used a dictionary.com defines phrase in his afterword. Wow. Very hacky.
And you're mad at Pete for focusing on the wrong thing, Alex? I think you just did the same thing. Because I got to say, like, you know, I don't think I ever have to read another Punisher story, and I guess I won't, because this one this one really brings together the themes and leaves it in such an emotional place. I love that Frank doesn't, like, get better, but he does, I think, which something he never does, take ownership a little bit of his legacy, his darkness, by banishing himself to Weird World, where he can start over and maybe be more of this, less of an avenging figure where he has to just murder, and more of a savior figure where he can actually help people, which I think is a much better place for him. And I like that, especially given the outer world of the Punisher symbol being something that maybe we don't really want to have championed as much anymore because of the real world context it's taken on. To put him in Weird World is a really interesting, smart choice. But my favorite part is the last moment we get here. We get Maria having it out with Frank in a good way. But then she walks away. We have the pregnancy test thing, which I think is a wild twist to throw out there.
Punisher babies are coming.
Yeah.
Nice.
Babies with guns. Pew, pew, pew. Ga-ga, goo.
And well, that is a big revelation. And Pete, definitely concerned about the money she has and if she's going to invest it wisely. I really liked the last two pages, which harken back to when Frank first met Maria in the belly of the beast here, and what first tempted him to take on this new role.
Yeah, we got we kind of got a missing moment there that we finally got, which kind of having at the end was so powerful.
And what I like about it is it comes right on the heels of Maria driving away. So it's almost like she's remembering this and remembering him at least a little fondly. And I imagine him, as we jump right from him to him in Weird World, it's almost like this memory is supplanting the picnic. Mm-hmm. So I really like that it gives Frank and maybe Maria something to sort of replace that trauma. Something where it's still there because they talk about it in this scene, but it's them actually being reunited and having a moment of peace in lives that were otherwise like chaotic. And as I've said, this is a Maria, this whole book is a Maria story. The Punisher's in it, but it's a Maria story. And so to leave us in that place, I thought was great, emotionally satisfying. It's the best Punisher story I've read in a very long time.
Do you think they should have called this book Maria instead? Like, this should have been Maria number 12?
Yeah, just this issue should have been Maria number 12.
Oh, okay. They should do a Maria spinoff where she's just hanging out, slowly having a baby.
I think, Jason Aaron here really set a new bar. I mean, his Punisher Max series was legendary. This kind of really is just such great work. It's really just a cool idea to explore, is this Punisher and what happened and what does he mean, and just kind of like really kind of peeling that apart and exploring it in such an interesting way that's also grounded in this insane way, like Zalbin was saying. I was just very moved by it. I was very impressed by the things that were covered. I liked how kind of Punisher handled himself when he had to kind of meet with everybody, with whether it was Black Widow or Logan or anything like that. So it was just it's really impressive the way it started and then the way it ended. Just well done from start to finish. Definitely worth getting the collected and kind of revisiting again and again for sure.
Absolutely. Let's move on to another big issue. Literally, it is huge. DC Pride 2023, number yes. one from DC Comics, written by Grant Morrison, Jerry Holt, Leah Williams, Mildred Lewis, Rex Ogle, Christopher Cantwell, Nicole Maines, Nadia Shamus, A.L. Kaplan, and Josh Trulio. Art by Hayden Sherman, Paulina Ganeshao, Bruca Jones, A.L. Kaplan, Don Aguio, Andrew Drialon, Mildred Lewis, Steven Sadowski, Skylar Patridge, and Rye Hickman. This is, as you can figure out from the title, a collection that comes out once a year to celebrate Pride Month. Here we're getting, once again, a lot of stories about the LGBTQ plus members of the DC universe. But I want to give a shout out to somebody that I didn't actually give mention here, and I completely blanked on his name, but the forward in this book.
Phil Jimenez.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I don't know why I had a blank there, but Phil Jimenez's forward is phenomenal. Like, the rest of the book, great. Fun short stories, beautiful art throughout. I think that was the real standout for me. But Phil Jimenez talking about why it is so important for him and so intrinsic to his character to be an out queer comic book creator, and talking about what it means to be queer in the DC universe. Fascinating. Fascinating, emotional, heartfelt.
Yep.
Worth it for the forward alone, as I like to say.
Something rarely say. But I mean, I love this collection across the board. This story that you get right out of the jump, off the jump from Grant Morrison.
Grant Morrison, yeah.
Is so good and is such, if you've been jonesing for some Grant content, this is it. They just crush it. And it is excellent. The writing, the art, it just is
this
crammed
takes place
with ideas.
In a alternate version of the DC universe, I forget which Earth it is exactly, but
23, 36.
Yes. And we get kind of an alternate version of Green Lantern, who's kind of trying to track down an alternate version of the Flash. They're in love. It is this epic love story, but it is over the frame of what Grant Morrison does best, which is 5,000 wild ideas on every single page. It's superb. Superb story, superb art from Hayden Sherman. Loved it.
Yeah, I was just super impressed with this collection of stories. Sometimes you get some hit or misses, but this was just all bangers. It really was impressive to see what they were doing with this Pride issue, and it was so cool. I mean, great use of Midnighter and Apollo. I really love the Batwoman story. Just some really fun, like, beefcake dude, like, pinup stuff. Just fun, amazing art. Just some really cool ideas, and also I like the change of the logo for this. It was just really well done. This is a total package here, and definitely worth picking up. It's going to be more money. There's a lot of stuff you get, but definitely feels worth it.
I want to shout out the Subspace Transmission story by A.L. Kaplan, written and drawn by A.L. Kaplan, like, featuring Circuit Breaker, a character I think we saw in the Lazarus crossover. Beautiful art, interesting story, love the character. Definitely down to see more of that. We had a good Robin story here. I really liked the preview at the end of this.
Oh, for Nicole Maines' Dreamer graphic novel?
Yeah. Man, that was really good. Very into that.
One thing that I'll throw out about this book, if you're interested at all, it struck me, this isn't true of every story across the board, but it's a really good romance comic. Like, if you're into looking for some fun romance short stories, there's one with Harley and Ivy where they're hanging out with Crush. Is that Robo's daughter? Yeah. Which I kept expecting it to go absolutely insane and actiony, and it really wasn't. It was just like a cute romance story with Harley and Ivy where they're kind of shepherding Crush as a baby gay, and allowing Crush to be more comfortable with their identity. Fun stuff across the board. Really good collection. Definitely check this one out.
And shouts to the tribute to Rachel Pollack as well. Yeah, yeah, and the Back Matter, which was just really great, really interesting. So a lot of stuff I haven't really read some of that early Doom Patrol stuff. So that's really cool.
I really think these collections, these DC Pride collections in particular, get better every single year. So I'm very excited that they keep doing them. Let's move on. Talk about Catfight, number one from IDW, written by Andrew Wheeler, art by Elias Krizaeus. I'm sorry, I just mangled his name. I apologize. But the idea of this book is a bunch of cat burglars being brought together for a heist, or are they? And are there twists? Of course there are. This is from the same writer as Sins of the Black Flamingo, which we really dug quite a bit, though it is a different artist on here. Super fun. I had a good time with this book. It delivers exactly what you want it to be for a book that bags together a bunch of wild cat burglars.
Yeah, I mean, that's you get it all in the kind of title there, and it really delivers. So it's just a great kind of expectation and then delivery. I love the art style. It's kind of like a fun, younger look to it, which I think really works here. And some interesting characters. And I'm excited. They do a good job of getting you excited for this world, this setup, all these cat burglars and how it's going to kind of unfold. So well done.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It felt a little flip to me at first, but by the time it lands the premise at the end of the book, I was like, oh, this is dope. I'm excited to read more.
Let's move on to another comic that I'm sure all three of us agree is totally dope. The Amazing Spider-Man number 26 from Marvel, written by Zeb Wells, art by John Romita Jr. So let's talk about this. We're going to get into spoilers here, but of course, Marvel spoiled this almost a month ago at this point. In this issue, we finally get the big events that they've been teasing for a very long time. We get a bunch of revelations here about everybody's favorite character, Paul, as well as everybody's second favorite character, Mary Jane. And, oh, also Miss Marvel dies at the end. So a lot of stuff is going on here in this book. This sucks. What do you guys think?
Wow, Alex.
Yeah!
I'm sorry. Here's the thing. No, don't cheer that. I feel bad about that. Everybody puts work into everything that they do, so I always feel bad about dissing any sort of book. But Zeb Wells, great writer. John Romita Jr., great artist. So there's a good team working on this. But all of the moves that are happening here are so wrong-headed to me. We've been having a little bit of discussion back and forth about the hit character of 2023, Paul, on our Slack, Patreon Slack. And one thing that's been brought up is the idea that a lot of people online are mad, and maybe some people online in the Zoom as well are mad because Paul is dating Mary Jane. I got to say, that's not my problem with Paul. My problem with Paul is he's a nothing character who I don't really care about at all, other than the fact that he's dating Mary Jane. I don't know anything about him. And in this issue, again, spoiler, we find out he is the son of the main villain, who is this guy who is an avatar for another guy who I also don't care about. So getting these connections to another character for me as a reader doesn't necessarily add anything to Paul or my caring about him. I do think you get some good emotion from Mary Jane here when she finds out what happens to her adoptive kids from this other world that she was trapped in. That's a hard moment to read. And I think emotionally that's well done in terms of how it's executed, because it's really rough and you really feel that. I think even the way that they lead up to the twist of how Miss Marvel dies is well done for the comic, but it's unnecessary to kill a young Muslim American female character who is just rising to prominence in service of the story of a white male who she has barely been in.
I think that's a fair complaint, but this is a build up to an event about Miss Marvel going into the Marvel's movie.
Like, yeah, I know. She's going to get her light powers from the MCU or whatever, and it's fine.
That's what
but
I'm
I
saying.
Don't.
So like,
from a comic book history perspective, I understand where they're going. From a world perspective, it's a really bad look for Marvel.
Fair, but I just think it wasn't like, let's choose this character to kill them randomly. It's an editorial choice lining up with a larger MCU decision. So like, I get it from an optics point of view, but I don't think there's any nefarious underpinnings to this move.
No, I don't think they're like, kill the Muslim character, because they're going to bring her back in 6 months before the Marvels comes out. I get all of that. But I do think, like you're saying, from an optics perspective, don't do that. Like, figure out another way to do it. Have her... You're dealing with this otherworldly being who, like, Reed Richards is like, let me take my fingers and we're going to put a glyph on this dragon that comes out of Central Park and change it into something else. If you really want to give Miss Marvel other powers, put a fucking glyph on her and change her into that instead of slicing her through the midsection with a sword and letting her die.
Well, I agree there. Like, to send her to this dimension or another place where mm-hmm. her powers are altered, I feel like that would have made sense. And, like, I understand the complaints you have. I guess I like this more than you guys because I like the place it's put.
You Peter, like this.
I like it more than you guys.
You're having a good time with this comic. You're reading this going, this is fun.
I love comics. I'm about to offer literally my positive and negative comments.
Okay, great. I can't wait.
I really like the way Peter's been done in in the Zeb Wells run. Mary Jane, I like their emotional stakes, how they still care for each other, but are sort of, it's not working because of all these different factors. I agree with you. The way it was constructed, which was purposefully coy, where we were moved 6 months forward, and then now we're only learning what happened, made it so we don't know anything about this villain or Paul, and it makes it hard to... Like you're saying, Alex, care about them or be scared of them or anything. I think it should have been set up a little bit more so we actually – Paul is someone who we don't just not know, and so thereby are like, well, he's no good. Like, replace – get him out of there. I like the move that Mary Jane knows his secret because, of course, they spent years together. Like, all of the moves are right. It's just there wasn't the ligature in place to really put us in a place to think this villain is cool because – some of it is interesting. It's just, it feels random because it just came out of nowhere and then now it's sort of being defeated. And it is like a little like he's a gateway to a god that we don't know. I like the John Romita art in this. I think it fits the story, the sort of totemic nature of the story. And I'm looking forward to where when we get a second to just focus on the relationship things because I think that's where the power is.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I agree with one thing you said, Justin, and that is the art is phenomenal. The art is really great because it's Romita Jr., but this is a fucking nightmare come to life. Like, all right, so if we're going to do this thing with MJ and Spider-Man or whatever, what the fuck are we doing? Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? So, okay, so they can't get together because she had kids in another world at a different time.
She didn't have kids. Paul, she found kids who don't exist.
Yeah, she found kids or whatever, and she's doing the right thing by them. Fine, cool. But then you're going to think that MJ is killed, but nope, MJ wasn't killed because they killed Ms. Marvel. What are we doing? What story is happening? This is insanity. How is this a pitch that somebody at Marvel said, you know what? I love this story. I'm going to give you the best artist, and you're going to fuck whatever you want to do, man.
I will say, Pete, you screaming about how did anyone at Marvel accept this pitch, you've been doing that about Spider-Man specifically for over a decade. So it's hard to say that they accept a lot of pitches. And I will say, if it hadn't been spoiled, I thought this was a well-done twist.
Go fuck yourself. That is not true. This is not a well-done twist.
Here, I'm going to throw it out. I think you actually said it very well, and then we can move on and talk about something else because the whole internet is arguing about this thing, I'm sure, at this point. But I think you're right about like the ligature not being there because Miss Marvel first meets Mary Jane towards the middle point of this issue. And not... that to be a hero, you need to know the person. That's not the point. You save people no matter what. And I get that because that's superhero literature. That's how it work. But if Miss Marvel was not introduced in issue 7 here, but if she was introduced as a main member of the cast throughout and developed a relationship with Mary Jane, this moment would have been much more impactful and felt a little
You guys are working really hard to try to make this comic good.
No, I'm saying I don't think this is good, and I don't think these moves are good, and I'm suggesting ways that I think it could have potentially been better. And I know that's not a good form of criticism to suggest plussing up the writing, but we're not good critics, and I don't care.
Well, but it does feel random that this is actually the death of Miss Marvel in this a book where she's not really a part of the cast, mm-hmm. to your point, and came out of nowhere, ran in, was killed, and then now the event moves into another book.
Yeah, so it's dumb.
It's very off-putting is the whole thing. And then to flip to the next page and be like, a fallen friend, the death of Miss Marvel, we pay tribute to her, followed by, this wasn't in the book, but they announced, I think today as we're taping or a day ago or something like that, that they're doing a book. They're like, remember how Captain Marvel used to be Miss Marvel? Here's a book with a similar cover. And I'm like, what are we doing here? What exactly is the agenda in terms of what we're pushing here? Like, if we're trying to set up stuff for the Marvels, give me a book where Monica Rambeau, Photon, who has a book right now, Captain Marvel, who has a book, Captain Marvel, and Miss Marvel, who somehow does not have a book, but like throw them in a book together. Do a book called The Marvels and give me that so that you have a trade on the stands for when The Marvels come out. Why are we screwing around with this other stuff?
Well, I bet they will do that.
Probably. Let's hope so.
It just won't happen for a little bit
because we're going to kill her first.
I don't know. I assume the thought process was like, Amazing Spider-Man is our premier title. Let's kill Miss Marvel off in there. And they just made the wrong decision. That's all.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Power Girl Special number 1 from DC Comics, written by Leah Williams and Joanne Starer, art by Marguerite Savage and Natasha Bustos, in case you haven't been keeping up with Power Girl. In the backup stories in Action Comics, I want to say, Power Girl now has psychic abilities where she can go into people's minds. We got a little bit of a setup in the last backup story, but Johnny Sorrow, one of her big enemies from the JSA days, has taken over the world and she's fighting against him in the psychic landscape. I really like this book, but I in particular really like this book for the Marguerite Savage art, which is absolutely stunning. And it's Leah Williams just writing for, hey, Marguerite Savage, create as many wild dream landscapes as you possibly can.
Hell yes, dude. I totally agree. I had a blast with this. This isn't one of my favorite characters, but the art was so super tight bananas. Love the colors, the brightness. It really pops. It's got a great vibe to it. Thought this was a solid first issue. Really cool use of Johnny Sorrow.
And last issue.
Oh, well. That's too bad because I feel like this was a great package. I love the use of Superman. I thought this was fun.
I feel like this one ends with a not the end or just the beginning. So it's not like this is the end. I think it's just the beginning. Only the beginning is what we get here. And I agree with you. I really like this for Power Girl. First off, I love the addition of the jacket. Reminds me of when they added the jacket to Black Knight over on the Avengers. Like 20,
and Cersei. Don't forget, Cersei also got
it. That's who I'm thinking of. Cersei. She was wearing the Avengers jacket. I love it. It's very cool. I really love sort of the power set. I love you rarely get to see a superhero really explore a new power for a while. Often it's like they're like, how am I doing this? And like when White Queen could turn into a diamond, she was like, this is strange. I'm good at it now and I will be going forward. And I feel like Power Girl is really like trying to figure it out. Her friend Omen, I believe, is along for the ride in a cool way. I also love the struggle with her connection to the super family and trying to be like, I'm part of them, but they don't really like me. And they're like, we do like you. And she's like, I'm not convinced yet. It's just really nice. It shows it's a more realistic understanding of how sort of family dynamics like that work. So I'm really on board with this. It's only the beginning.
Yeah, cool. It does. I will say it feels a little similar to me with the whole Superman family comment to the Connor Kent book, which is like Superman, Man of Tomorrow. I'm forgetting what the exact title is, where he also was like, oh, man, what is my place in the Superman family? There's a lot of Supermans in Metropolis right now. So I did feel that a little bit, but I think the execution is still good. So it ultimately doesn't matter.
interesting because I feel like with Connor, he's like, I'm Superman's son. Who are these other kids now that he has? He's feeling replaced.
Oh, no, especially, John Kent is feeling replaced. Sorry, Connor Kent is the clone.
All right. I mean, I'm talking about John Kent feeling replaced. I thought that's what you were talking about.
No, I was talking about Connor Kent. Here's the problem. Oh. Too many Supermans. We need a new death of Superman. Kill them all.
No.
Wipe them all
stop
out.
Stop killing.
Oh, wow. Lex Luthor was right.
See, because Superboy, I feel like, is like, I'm not part of that. I'm going to go do my own thing. While John, I think, is struggling with the other kids who are now going to grow up when he didn't get the chance to do that.
Here's the thing. I think, and I believe this very strongly, they should kill John Kent, but they should do it over in, like, The Flash or something like that, like some unrelated title.
No, they should do it in Spider-Man 2. That would be wild.
That's every issue they kill a new character in Spider-Man. Great. Starstorm number one from Image Comics by Drew Craig. This is about a dude who goes to high school and he's got superpowers.
Yeah, there's Kirby High and it's not Grant Morrison. It's Grant Garrison. Did you see what they did there? So it's not quite, you know what I mean?
I'll tell you what, I wanted to like this book and I think there's a lot of earnestness here. I don't think it quite worked for me because a lot of the dialogue a little stilted, I felt like.
It feels very much like someone's first swing at a comic. And, like, it reminds me of, like, honestly, like, creating comics when I was young and, like, being like, oh, I can, you know, you take little pieces from other things that you've read. It feels a little bit like it's collecting ideas, a little derivative. So, like, yeah, I don't think this is something I'm like, this was cool. But, like, the art was very specific. It feels like a unique take, but it's not something I'm like, I love this art. It feels like someone figuring out how to draw comics.
I mean, I'm surprised, this is going to be very rude to say it, I'm sorry, but I was surprised it was published by Image Comics. If it's something that somebody sent us from, like, Cooler Head Comics, I'm looking at a cooler in my head. That's where I came up with that.
Well, you guys are being negative. Let me be positive here. I thought this was a great first issue. I really thought the art style was very young and very kind of different. So fresh. It had a kind of a fresh take on it. I liked the fact that it felt kind of new and struggling a little bit. Trying to figure itself out, just like the character. I thought it had this kind of young, not sure what it is vibe that fit the whole comic. So I don't know. I thought for a first issue, they did a great job of setting up the world, setting up the premise, giving you kind of a tease of the cool action suit that the hero got and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I wasn't as negative as you, Nancy's, and I enjoyed it.
This Nancy over here, I was reminded while I was reading this of a comic by the name of Captain Jones.
Oh! Yeah, maybe Pete. That's why I liked it so much. Maybe.
That's Pete's comic that he made.
Can you still read that anywhere, Pete? You want to plug it?
Well, thanks. Unfortunately, I don't think you can.
That's called an unplug.
Let's unplug that, yeah.
Great. Captain America, Symbol of Truth, number 13 from Marvel, written by Taki Onyebuchi, art by R.B. Silva. This is continuing the Cold War storyline. And finally, we get a little bit of that Cold War teased by the premise as the two Captain Americas go head-to-head as they've been manipulated by Bucky and the White Wolf. Which is another name for Bucky. So there's two Buckys.
And the revolution.
Americas, and there's a revolution, and they're having revolutions. So there's a lot of stuff going on. And there's two Captain Americas, and they're fighting, and there's explosions in the background, and the end.
Okay. Wow. So,
we've kind of hit the run of books that I didn't like very much.
I was going to say, you clearly. Well, and let me say, because I agree with you, I found it very, like, implausible the way the fight between Sam and Steve is set up here. Like, it feels like they needed them to fight, so they just, like, let's have them fight. It doesn't, and I hope they find a way to justify it, because it felt very artificial and late on. But the fight itself, I thought, was dope, and the R.B. Silva art is it's like a banana, but like a dense, you know, almost like a
super
tight,
dense bananas,
almost like a tightened banana.
I thought this was a lot of fun. I mean, I hated to see those two fight, but I was kind of happy
with
how. But
you love to see them go.
No, I was happy. I was happy with the outcome and kind of how it went down. I really love the last panel. The spoilers here, but I'm going to read a line. This is, whatever trap we walked into, it's still trapping. Just a fun. I love Misty Knight. I thought this was kind of moving things forward, setting things up. Yeah, I'm having a blast with this, and I'm excited to see them stop fighting and start working together. But yeah, you have this when, you know, you get big time heroes together and everybody's got ideas. You know, sometimes there's going to be some clashing, especially if you start talking about family, because you don't know what my family life was like. But I'll tell you about it as I beat the shit out of you.
It was great. I love that dialogue from Sam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Torrent number 4 from Image Comics, written by Mark Guggenheim, art by Justin Greenwood. This is following a superhero on not exactly a Justice League type team, but kind of, that gives you the idea, who her family has been targeted by her arch nemesis and her husband has been killed. And now she's gone full Punisher, not the Beast Punisher, but regular Punisher, to try to take him down and kill him, as she's been abandoned by the cops. She's been abandoned by the heroes. And in this issue, the heroes in her team basically say, you've gone too far. We have to take you down. So she has to take them down in turn. I say this positively. This reminded me very much of the issue in Identity Crisis where Deathstroke takes down the entire Justice League.
Oh, wow.
Very similar to that, just in terms of structuring as she takes everybody down one by one. I continue to be impressed by this book.
Yeah, I really love the tone of this. I love the way it starts, where it's like, well, shit. I thought just amazing art style. Love the action and the storytelling. I feel like this is hitting a great groove here with issue number 4. I'm kind of having a blast with this main character and kind of really kind of exploring things. So I think this is kind of really hitting.
It's funny you love the beginning, because I thought I was a little bit off put by the beginning. I'd read a comic we're talking about a minute, Local Man number 4, which feels like a better version of this type of story in a lot of ways.
Take it easy with that, Tom, man.
Well, I'm just saying. So, and I
that a little bit. I mean, you're blaming on the order that you read it. Jesus Christ.
Well, but like I'm just saying it's similar idea of
Justin. Don't you ever compare comics ever?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be crazy. That's have you ever had a stack of pancakes? I take out each pancake. I'm like, this pancake is really good. There's the right thickness. This one's a little thin. This one's a crap in disguise.
I usually take out the third one and I say, this pancake is worth it for the art alone.
Yeah, exactly.
That's nice. And then you eat it.
Mm-hmm. And I say, this pancake shouldn't kill off a main character in the other wider pancake universe in these pages. They haven't earned that in these cakes.
This pancake killed off by blueberry syrup over in bacon.
Oh, man. Breakfast stack. Let's go. Let's do it. Next up, glass of milk. I don't like it.
What would happen? Doesn't belong here. How many podcast listeners would we lose if we started reviewing 30 pancakes in a row? Probably none of them, I got to be honest. I think.
Welcome to the fork.
I really sell it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a main part of everyone's day.
Come on, man. Start talking about the comic.
Pete, instead of start talking about the comic, Justin, Pete, start talking about the pancakes.
Yeah, exactly. Pete, you do the pancake. I mean, we do comics. They only come out once a week. Breakfast comes out every day.
Come on, dude. Already with this shit.
We should do a daily podcast about a stack of pancakes.
Torrent, come on.
Why are you mad?
You can't torrent pancakes. About? They're not digital.
Yeah. Oh, man, don't worry. It's Mother's Day. I downloaded Breakfast in Bed for you, babe. What? Does it work?
That's the only thing that people get, right?
All these pancakes is just pornography. Whoops. So what I was saying about
Pete is so small in the camera right now. I wish I could see it.
It's like he gets smaller. If we drift away from comics, Pete gets tinier on the podcast. Eventually, he's going to be like, guys, hey guys, what are we going to
talk
about?
Come on, talk about the fucking comics, you asshole.
Stop talking about pancakes.
So what I was saying is, I actually thought this issue, Torrent number 4, ended in a really interesting place. I like the idea that she loses her powers. Spoiler of this character has that ability, takes away her ex's powers right in front of her, mm-hmm. who seems sort of nice, but also he's trying to get her. I really like the art in this book as well.
Great. That is worth the wait. Jesus Christ.
All right, should we move on to the next thing? Let's talk about Buttermilk Silver Dollars. Now, I don't like buttermilk, but silver dollars are fun because they're smaller. What do you guys think?
Pete? You want less pancakes? Pete? Get out of here.
What's next? Star Trek Annual? Local? What the fuck comic is next? Look,
Pete doesn't really have the list in front of him, so he can't even fix it. He's lost. What's next is
Buttermilk Silver Dollar. So take it away. Pete?
I just feel
Deep
like
Cuts they, number two, Image Comics.
No.
All right. I feel like you know I feel like they
annoy me if you start going out of order.
Exactly. I feel like they retcon flapjacks in a way that doesn't make a lot of sense.
You know, they retcon wheat cakes. Where are those? I'd love to see those come back in some form. Here's the thing. I was talking to somebody at PancakeCon recently, and they were like, there are no bad pancakes. Okay. It's just how you execute them.
Deep Cuts by Image Comics, written by Kyle Rogers and Joe Clark.
That's like the last book we're talking about.
Avengers Beyond. Well, then fucking go, motherfucker.
Hey, yo, stop.
Where are you going? We're here all night. Avengers Beyond number 3 from Marvel, written by Derek Landy, art by Greg Land. In this issue, the Avengers are going up against the Black Order. They are trying to fight against this enormous armored evil being who's trying to take over the universe and specifically kill the Beyonder. Spoiler here, but it turns out the Beyonder has been tricking them the entire time, so there's a big twist at the end of the book. Classic Beyonder. What'd you guys think about this?
I like this. I love the Black Order. And maybe I'm suckers because I feel like they're almost becoming the Royal Flush Gang of the Marvel Universe, where so many comics are like, well, we got to take down Corvus Glaive. But shouts to these names, Black Swan, Ebony Maw, Proxima Midnight, and Corvus Glaive. Ugh. Great. How do you get that many great names on a team?
That's Jonathan Hickman. That's Jonathan Hickman, man.
Corvus Glaive. It sounds like nonsense, but it's great.
Mm-hmm. Here's the problem is nobody knows what to do with them other than Jonathan Hickman. That's it.
Like they had the Royal Flush Gang.
Yeah, 100%. But they had like one use, which is we're the beginning part. We're the lieutenants of Thanos. Thanos is coming. It's all going down. It's going to be horrible. And they were badass in their first appearance. And absolutely right, Justin. Every single appearance since, they've been like, we're disposable.
Yeah. Black Dwarf. I forgot about him.
I'm enjoying the twists and turns in this. I think it's got great art, great fight scenes, fun action. Love it.
Yeah, the Greg Land art, it makes for some good fight sequences, and the Landy-Land combination is fun. And let me say, the preview for the next issue, I'm hyped for.
I will say, on the negative bent, this was my least favorite issue of the all-out Avengers and Avengers Beyond. I think this felt a little perfunctory in terms of the concept, but at the same time, I'm still really enjoying this book. Love the twist at the end. I want to throw something out at you guys. The big villain who is trying to kill the Beyonder here is completely armored and masked. He's got to be somebody, right?
Dr. Doom?
You think it's Dr. Doom?
Armored mask.
Right. Could be. Pete, do you have a theory? Who is Armor Man? No? Just nothing?
Nothing. Okay, great. No theory.
Great. Your only requirement on a podcast is to talk, so please don't do that.
Let me just say, this reminds me of some of the later runs of Avengers, the Ultimates, the Ultimate Universe Avengers book, because it just is a lot of characters fighting and then like another character's hovering over the planet being like, I'm also here.
Yeah. This is very fun. Star Trek Annual number 2023. That's not right. Star Trek Annual 2023.
Wow. No, they've been releasing one each year since Zero. So it's
Jesus was like, hey, did you guys check out this Star Trek Annual? I don't know what it means, but you'll know
in
a while.
You won't get this yet. But man,
yeah. Classic Jesus always being like, oh, you guys are going to get this.
He's always playing the long game.
Yeah. He said, "Beam me up, Holy Ghost." That was like one of his catchphrases.
Anyways.
Turned water into synthahol. The Star Trek Annual 2023, I almost said it again, from IDW, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Rachel Stott. In this book, we are following the ship. I'm forgetting the name of the ship that we've been following in the main Star Trek book.
Oh, I thought you meant you couldn't come up with the Enterprise. I was like, no.
Well, that's the weird thing. It's like it's another ship, but it's an advanced ship that they don't really the Theseus that they don't really understand. It's featuring an all-star cast of Star Trek folks, and in this book, the holodeck basically becomes sentient and sends them on a mission through various Enterprises and other ships, including Discovery and several others. Basically, if you've seen a TV show, they send them there throughout time to find out what's going on, leading to a surprising revelation about the holodeck. I'll tell you what, the logic of this bothered me a little bit because it wasn't focused on the Theseus or the Enterprise. It was just like Star Trek shows. But I enjoyed this so much at the same time, I didn't care.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I mean, first off, have you watched any Star Trek in your life? The logic gets you to a place, but beyond, especially a holodeck episode, it's like, in this one, the holodeck thinks. Later.
Pete, what did you think about this? You're not as much of a Star Trek guy.
Yeah, as someone who, I thought this hit kind of like all the fun characters for me. I'm not, I don't know all the characters, but I definitely knew the ones that were kind of focused on here. It was fun to see Scotty drinking and having some fun. And then the fun Captain Kirk reveal, where even one of the characters was like, "Holy crap, it's Captain Kirk," which was my reaction exactly. So, yeah, I think they're really leaning into the fun of this. And, I thought it was just such a great use of the characters and the art. And it was just kind of a fun romp, I thought. And I had a blast with it.
Well, and I also want to say, like, reading this comic, not just this annual, but this all this current run where it is, like, setting logic a little bit by the wayside and just bringing together, like, fun characters and doing fun Star Trek stuff. It's just such a great distillation of what makes Star Trek great. And unlike other Star Trek comics where it's like, that's pretty good. I get why they're doing this. This made me want to go watch more Star Trek. Mm-hmm. So, shouts to that. I like this a lot.
Yeah, this feels like, this is not the correct anniversary, but this feels like Star Trek 50th anniversary special or something, where it's just Easter eggs all over the place. I love the fact that they had, I'm forgetting his exact name, but I think it's Shax from Lower Decks even shows up here, and he's playing D&D with them at one point. You have like Guinan in the background and super tiny. Oh, so shout out to Rachel Stott on the art in particular for packing every single frame with so many Easter eggs for so many things. It's very fun. It's a fun read.
It's a love letter.
Exactly. Let's move on and talk about Justin's favorite book in the stack, Local Man number 4 from Image Comics by Tim Seeley and Tony Fleeks. This is a 90s Image Comics throwback where a dude from a Youngblood, I would say, style team has been exiled to his hometown. He has investigated mystery there that ties back to his original team. It all comes down to this issue. A lot of the mystery comes out. Justin, what did you like about this book? And why, in particular, is it so much better than Torrent number 4? Torrent number 4. What was the one you said? I don't know.
No, it was Torrent. Okay. It was Torrent. I didn't say it was so much better. It's just,
it makes Torrent 4 looks like a piece of shit. Take it away.
Oh, God.
it's dealing a little bit with like a new look or like a postmodern take on your classic super team. But what this book really reminds me of in a good way is the Hawkeye, the landmark Hawkeye run by Matt Fraction that really put Hawkeye sort of back on the map. This feels like that for 90s Image Comics in a great way. Scott Snyder has a quote on the front of this book, one of the best new series I've read in a long time. Like, this book, if you're not reading it, highest recommendation to check out if you're at all interested in any of the nouns or adjectives that we've been saying about it. It's a great story. We're seeing this this character like fuck up, find his way, win, lose, the town hates him. Like, it has just so many great emotional elements while also having some good action and a mystery that is you know, still unfolding, even in this issue.
Yeah, I really was impressed by this. Love the twists and turns. Really like the main character. A really cool last panel. I feel like this is obviously written by pros, and it just felt...
Tim Seeley.
It felt really fun, and I'm hooked.
And a shout out to the backup stories here. I think this one in particular, or maybe all of them, are written and drawn by Tim Seeley in classic 90s, 2000s Image comic style. They are pitch perfect, like just 100% nailing that tone, but also fleshing out the world of the book. Like, they're not just goofs, which is really, really impressive.
And this one specifically folds into the main story in a way that, like, you have to read the backup to get it. And in a fun but very Tim Seeley way does it close, I would say.
Yeah. Doctor Strange number 3 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Pascal Ferry. And I'll also add it's by another team, but they don't give them the credits in the copy of the book that I read. So I don't know who wrote or did the art. But it is a Nico Bitterew story. What did you think about this issue?
This is one of my favorites of the week. This was just such a fun kind of like Doctor Strange and Dormammu just having a walk, talking about all their adventures that they've been on together. And I don't know, I thought it was just kind of like a hilarious, fun, just kind of trip down memory lane, but also had some fun twists and turns because it's Doctor Strange. And I was just really impressed with the kind of art style and the kind of crossover of the backup and stuff. I thought it was really cool and unique.
It's weird there aren't credits for the backstory even in the issue.
It's very weird. They put it on the front, but they only put their last name. So, and I looked on Marvel.com, and they don't list it either, and I don't know why. It's a real bummer. Because I like the story. Whoever wrote it, I think it was probably...
I got it. It's in the front. Amy Chu and Toki Takoro.
Oh, thank you. All right.
It's weird though that it's not in the actual... back area, but it's good. It's especially like as a two-part thing. Like, I feel like this is something we've been talking about a lot, or at least I have. Like, I'm loving comics with backups. We talked about it with Action Comics, like the way that we're fleshing out different areas and using different characters. Like, it's just I love that experience because you're dipping your toe into so many different worlds. But my guy Jed McKay on Doctor Strange, this was a great just Dormammu hang.
Yeah.
Like Pete said, and really well done. I love the way each issue of this feels like almost like back on Black Cat, the way everything was a little bit of a scam. There was a little bit of twist. This one, we get the twist at the end, which I won't spoil, but it's really well done, touching another Marvel continuity. And Doctor Strange gets to be like cocky in his way, while actually solving the problem for now, and then a nice twist at the end. Whew! It's a great package.
Yeah, I agree.
Next up, World Tree, number 2 from Image Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Fernando Blanco. This is following a naked lady who is killing people and trying
naked
to infect them.
Naked knife lady, as I like to call it.
Naked knife lady. And trying to infect them with what I like to call a woke mind virus that is taking over.
Oh, man.
What the fuck, dude?
No, but there's a mind virus that is infecting people and causing them to kill other people. There is a group who dealt with this back in the day, this computer virus that infects minds, and they're once again trying to ramp up on that. This is a much wider spanning issue than the first issue, as we flesh out a lot of the characters that we met and I think meet some new ones at the same time. What'd you guys think about this follow-up?
Yeah, I was super impressed with it. I mean, I'm scared of it as well. This is crazy, scary stuff that's going on, but the art is super tight bananas. But yeah, it is very violent and very intense, and I was really worried about the naked knife lady behind the main character the whole time. But
well, you have that poster of her standing right behind you.
Ah, that's not a poster!
Got him. This book's scary. In a way, it's unsettling. It's not just because I'm not really scared of horror stories.
All right,
in the way that some of us are.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Well, no, I just mean like
Pete. I don't have feelings. I don't get scared of things.
Yeah. All right, I don't scream and sob every time I see the Boogeyman trailer in theaters.
Yeah. All of those things are true. No, but Pete, you talk about how you like horror bothers you. You don't like to read it or consume it, and I like it. But there's something about this story that is more unsettling, despite that there's not a ton of horror.
Is it the female nudity, Justin?
No, big fan. But the book has a tone of like a 90s, almost like an Outer Limits or a show I used to watch that messed me up mentally called Beyond
Red
Belief.
Shoe Diaries? Oh, what?
No.
Oh, my God.
But I know. I've read your in-depth reviews of each of those Red Shoe Diaries episodes.
Thank you. I really try to limit them to 5,000 words, but I never get there.
Nice. I know there's so much to say. Erotic Cakes. Beyond Belief is a series I was talking about. But this, or like an X-Files episode, standalone episode, this has like a 90s sci-fi feel to it, which makes it even more unsettling. The way the virus infects people. James Tynion is so good at writing these stories that just get under your skin a little bit.
Yeah.
And then just blows it out. And this is just another version of that in a more scary tone.
Speaking of spooky, scary stuff, Alien number 2 from Marvel, written by Declan Shalvey, art by Andrew Brocardio. This is following a remote science/mining colony, I guess, who is, has a bunch of aliens under the ice, and oopsie daisy, they released all the aliens.
Going to nest and trying to...
all aliens.
Yeah.
They were just ice mining, and it just happened to be...
I'll tell you what.
Run for your lives.
I really liked the first issue of this. I compared it to like The Thing, just because of the frozen ice setting meets Alien.
Yeah.
But this ramps up so exponentially by the end of the second issue in a crazy way.
By the beginning, I was going to say the same thing.
Jumping
I was
on
like,
the backpack, I was just like, oh my God.
Well, the first issue was so like, ooh, slow, meeting the people, like doing the same things of like, don't trust these this corporation showing up. And then in this issue, it's like, nope, it's 500 aliens are there. And the backpack one helps out our hero. Like, it just escalates so much that I'm like, this feels like the end of the fifth issue, as if instead of like end of the second.
But that's good. I wanted to be clear. Oh, you want it to be slower? Because I think that's good. Like, I think this feels to me like Declan Shalvey going for broke with his alien stories. Like, if this is the one alien story I could tell, I'm going to make it go as insane as humanly possible. And I love that. I like that.
It's going for Brocardo, Andrew Brocardo's art, which is also, I think, what Pete's going for.
Pete, take it away. Were you going to say going for Andrew Brocardo's art?
I just was, this was scary as fuck, and it got real intense real fast, so it was quite a ride. I did
love
the art.
All right, well, why don't we move on? I don't think, Pete, we're going to have time for Deep Cuts number 2, so we'll go to the next title after that. I'm kidding. Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark, art by Helena Maselis. This is an anthology title that's telling different stories about music and jazz music in particular, it seems, at least in the first two issues. In the second issue, we are following a woman who is hoping to become a Broadway music writing superstar. She's got to write a jazz number for her Broadway musical to save it in one weekend. That's all she's got. And so
She's got till Monday.
So she heads to Chicago and learns some important lessons about life, and it ends in a very interesting place. I know we were big fans of the first issue. What did we think about the second one?
Well, this is a beefy issue. It's big. There's a lot going on. But, man, the art is just absolutely phenomenal in this. I love the use of music in this issue. Really impressive. I thought that it's a very unique story, and I also love the kind of way it looks like an album cover. I think it's very interesting. It drags a little bit. I felt like, but man, I thought it was pretty awesome overall and super creative.
Did anyone call this comic beefy yet? Because it is beefy. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Lots of beef. Yeah. Substantial. I like this series. I think it is, I think Kyle Higgins is really like putting a lot into these stories, and it feels like a passion project by the creators. So that's really cool. I agree. This one gets a little bit... your main character feels like not the best person, someone who's like coming in and trying to take from jazz history for her own ends. I like where it ends up and sort of the melancholy turn at the very end. But in general, I think this series is really interesting. I'm going to keep reading. I like the anthology.
The art is really gorgeous as well. I think the characterizations that Helena Michalis draws are really beautiful throughout. I like the jazz era stuff that we get to see throughout here. And like you said, I think it's good to show a character like that. I think it's good to show something that doesn't necessarily have the resolution that you want, that it ends in a slightly more realistic place. It's interesting. I like it. I do not at any point pretend that I understand the music scene, particularly the jazz music scene of the 1920s or anything like that.
What?
I know. So somebody please tell me if I'm wrong, if you were alive then and you know it from first person experience. But this feels very authentic to me in terms of the way that they're trying to execute it. We read books that play with music sometimes where it just doesn't work because you're a comic book. Here, I think it works, and I really like this book quite a bit. It's smart, and it's interesting. Let's move to our last one, Clobber in Time, number 3 from Marvel by Steve Scroggie. This is each issue teaming up the Thing with another character in the Marvel Universe to fight this time-traveling dude who he keeps accidentally bumping into. Here, we're getting a team-up with Doctor Strange, and in particular, the way that Steve Scroggie draws him, very clearly Benedict Cumberbatch in the book. It continues to be fun and gross and ridiculous. I am having a blast reading this book.
I agree. Great expressions throughout. That Doctor Strange gets to have so many like goof faces, which are fun. I got to shout out the healing potion flick that the Thing does in the Doctor Strange's mouth.
Sometimes you just got to flick it, man. There's no time. You know what I mean? You just got to flick it.
You just got to flick it. Shouts to the Thing's bare, rocky ass, which you get a strong gander. Right.
Showing a little backside there.
Yeah, which, you know, I get it. You got to change your undies every now and again. I also wanted, like, we get this guy, the Unwatcher, Tuva 2, who is like a watcher who's like trying to look a little badass, but you can't be badass as a watcher. Your head's too big. You got a baby head.
Pete, what did you think about this one?
Yeah, I agree with you. I just had a blast with this. This is a lot of fun. I love the art style. It's so cool and inviting and just really sets a fun tone for the whole book. I was a little worried because I had read Doctor Strange before this and was worried I would be over Doctor Strange.
Okay. You know? Oh, I see. Well, maybe you should change your pancake order.
I wasn't, though. You know, it was just so enjoyable and so pleasant that I wasn't affected by my reading order. That's how good this book is. And yeah, I think this is just a nonstop adventure from start to finish and is just a fun comic to definitely pick up and must check out.
The other thing I like about it is we have this ongoing story of the time traveler chasing down the Thing. And I feel like the Thing is like maybe one of the last characters you'd expect to really need to be like affected by a time traveler. He's like, I don't know. I'm just trying to get through my day, guy. Why are you mad at me, you old steel nose? Get out of here.
Well, and I wonder, I mean, to that point, one of the most famous early Thing stories is the one where he travels back in time with Doctor Doom's time platform and becomes Blackbeard. So yeah. I wonder if that was kind of the inspiration or that's something, I mean, next issue he's going to team up with Doctor Doom. So I wonder if we're going to loop back to that in some way. I guess we'll see.
Well, it's interesting. Both this time traveler and Doctor Doom have steel noses.
You're connection. Very into the steel on faces this episode.
Well, if you're going to wear steel, it feels like you wear steel. It's your thing. Not a ton of people go that way.
Yeah. If you're going to wear steel, you got to eat a whole meal. And for us to eat a whole meal, you got to support us at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube.
Unless there's a movie.
Unless then there's a movie. Okay, buddy.
It still happens.
Come on out. We would love to talk to you about comics, just iTunes, the music cues, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
The best pancake is the one on the bottom because it absorbs all the syrup. And just like the best comic book is the one at the bottom because it absorbs the most syrup.
What? Are you eating your comics?
No, I'm just pouring syrup on them before I read them. So I can grip them with my sticky fingers.
Yeah, it sounds to me like you're punishing them.
Hey, come on. They sit on crappy couches and they